From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, in this episode, we'll be discussing higher education in the state of Illinois. Colleges and universities are dealing with myriad issues from financial to campus unrest. Some have seen strong enrollment, others not so much. Some smaller colleges have closed, and some have taken actions, including faculty layoffs. We'll talk higher ed coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. Our guests include from WBEZ, the higher education reporter Lisa Currian Phillip. She works in partnership with Open Campus Media. And also we have Peter Medlin, an education reporter for WNIJ Public Radio and host of the show Teacher's Lounge. Thanks to both of you for joining us.
Thanks for having us, Sean.
Thanks so much.
So, Peter, I'll start with you on this, and then Lisa, I want to get your thoughts as well. A lot of campuses, it seems there is a big worry about finances. That's really nothing new when it comes to higher education, especially over the last couple of decades in Illinois. But how much of a concern is it right now? Peter, go ahead.
Yeah, obviously, it's going to depend on the particular universities, but you know, a lot of state schools or NIU, Western, Southern are operating on big budget deficits. We're talking about in the tens of millions of dollars. And so in some places like Western just had some pretty brutal faculty and staff layoffs last month, talking around 90 faculty and staffs, reductions in department budgets and, you know, students learning over the summer that their favorite professor isn't coming back and having to switch schedules around because some classes aren't being offered. So that stuff's happening. And I know that even at schools like NIU, where they've been able to avoid stuff like that so far, I mean, when you have a budget, you know, deficit that high, nobody really feels safe at that point. So yeah, it's been, a big problem and not something that is sure to go away soon. I mean, there's even some creative stuff like there. Just a couple of weeks ago, I saw there was news over from Rich Egger over at Tri-States Public Media that Western Illinois University was exploring whether to close some buildings on campus. And like one of the options was even to sell the president's residence. And it caught my eye because Northern Illinois University tried to do the same thing a few years ago, selling the president's house to help pay for these, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of deferred maintenance that they have too.
Well, Lisa, are you seeing similar things happening with higher ed, especially in the Chicago area?
Yeah, it definitely is hitting schools here. I mean, the big schools like University of Illinois, Chicago, University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign continue to have growing enrollments, right? Because they are able to charge more for tuition and they have big endowments and they have these, you know, prestigious names and students are drawn to them. Whereas some of our smaller public regional schools like Chicago State and Northeastern Illinois have really struggled with their finances in recent years. And I think it's a trend that we've seen for the past couple of decades that state funding for these schools has dropped dramatically. And in so to compensate for that, these schools are having to charge more for tuition. And that really hurts, you know, like students from marginalized communities the most, the students who can least afford college. And these public regional schools are the ones that are most serving these particular communities of students. So when students opt out of higher ed altogether, you know, it's like it's these universities that are hurting the most, the Chicago States, the Northeasterns, and I think really contributing to their financial difficulties.
You know, Charlie, walk us back on how this all came about. I mean, there was a time when I first started covering state government in the 90s where higher education would pretty much get what it wanted from state government. That changed, especially with the Blagojevich administration, and it's created a lot of problems since then.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability came out with a report earlier this year saying that state funding for Illinois colleges and universities in fiscal year 24, which ended on June 30th, was about 39% lower than it was in fiscal year 2000 when you adjust for inflation. And they concluded this long-term disinvestment over the last 20 years in higher education has had significant consequences, It's forced public universities to increase their tuition and fees, causing the average cost of in-state tuition to increase 121%, substantially higher than the national average, makes Illinois College considerably less affordable, and it's forced virtually all Illinois students to incur student loans in order to pay for college, especially Black and Latino students, which perpetuates an educational attainment gap. And Sean, as you suggested, it probably started with Rod Blagojevich, and at the time, there was a joke that it was the revenge of the C student, how he was not budgeting for higher education. So it's been an ongoing thing, and it's interesting because this effort that's underway to come up with a new model for funding higher education in Illinois is sort of based on what we did with the school-based or the elementary and secondary education funding, where we adopted a formula that's kind of based on what the needs are for each individual school district, what the resources are. The gap is something that the state is attempting to close. And at the rate we're going, we may get it closed in another 15, 20 years because it's still really large. The legislature set up a commission on equitable university funding, and they've done some studies. They came up with some proposals, but they estimated that the gap between what they view is necessary to sustain higher education is something like $1.5 billion. And so that's a huge chunk of change. And as a matter of fact, according to the most recent state budget, the one that got adopted for the current fiscal year, the total appropriations for higher education, including not just the schools, but also the scholarships, community college, it's roughly $5 billion. So they're saying that you're still short, what? You're still short like a quarter of what you need. That's a huge chunk of change.
And I should mention, Charlie's a retiree with the state university retirement system. I work for the University of Illinois Springfield, and Peter is also an employee with Northern Illinois University. Peter, you've followed this proposal that's out there, and that's all it is, I guess, at this point. They have indicated that they'd like to try to make some progress on this going into the next budget. But yeah, like Charlie was saying, that's a big ask.
Yeah, and like Charlie was saying, a lot of this is inspired by the work they did back in 2017 to change how K-12 education is funded based on this, right, this idea of an adequacy target, right? Like, this is how much money it would take for this individual school district to be adequately funded. Here's how far you are away from it. And then, you know, the schools furthest away from that target get prioritized for the most money. Schools that have these big endowments and are actually seeing growing enrollment, you know, obviously they're going to be much closer to that now than a school like Northeastern or Western Illinois University. And so, you know, the formula is supposed to, you know, weigh multiple different factors about the sorts of, you know, if you have a large number of low-income students or, you know, the cost of instruction and operations and maintenance, which is, it's very different than how higher education is currently funded, where typically it ends up just being a flat, you know, 5% increase or 7% increase or what have you. And yeah, with this new proposal, they would be asking for a pretty huge increase in state investment for public universities and for higher education. I believe that the request that the Senate Majority Leader Kimberly Lightford mentioned is that the request would be that the new formula adds $135 million a year for the next 10 years.
The commission, in their report, said that the formula that they were proposing says there's a total adequacy gap of $1.4 billion, and that includes $787 million in new spending for equity adjustments and $473 million in increased spending for all students. So one of the things they're attempting to do is put more money in the schools that tend to serve low-income minority students that don't have the kind of deep coffers, say, the U of I does. As a matter of fact, they said that University of Illinois is 92% at where it should be. Northeastern Illinois University up in Chicago is at 39%.
Lisa, if I hear this and I'm a taxpayer, your average taxpayer, sitting there hearing, okay, well, you need more money for elementary and secondary education. Of course, there's numerous other needs across the state. Now you're talking about this. When is enough enough? Seems like it's going to be pretty hard sell, I would think.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the people behind this bill and higher education advocates would argue it's a very necessary investment if the state of Illinois is going to compete with other states. We need to have a college-educated workforce. You know, you also have to consider that there is a lot of questioning of the value of a college degree, but if you look at the numbers, it bears out that people who have bachelor's degrees make earn more over their lifetimes. They meet a lot of the other quality of life metrics there are. You know, they participate civically in society. There are just countless benefits to getting a college education. And I think a lot of people in higher education would say this is a necessary investment. And, you know, if we're going to keep up as a state, it's one we need to find the money for. I've often heard in recent months and talking to faculty members and students even and advocates this thought that we as a state spend so much preparing our students for high school graduation and put all of this money into making them really prepared for college, and then we kind of just say good luck, you're on your own, and we're putting in this investment, and a lot of students are not only opting out, some a good portion of students are leaving the state to attend college elsewhere. So a lot of folks see this as kind of a missed opportunity.
Do we know how many students really we are losing? I was seeing different numbers years ago. I don't know if there's anything that's that updated, but that seems to be a dynamic when it comes to enrollment in Illinois that a lot of young people are leaving to go out to other states to higher education.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of our border states, the tuition at their public institutions is lower than here in Illinois. So there's a big draw there to be able to go to a school out of state that is more affordable than U of I or UIC. So I think it's definitely a trend that continues. And it's one that's often talked about in the scope of this conversation in terms of this investment. Like we need to be keeping students here so that they are less likely, you know, to students who leave the state to go to college are less likely to come back and invest their skills in the state. So if we make a bigger effort to keep them here, we're adding college educated workers to the economy here in Illinois.
Charlie, I think you wanted to weigh in. Go ahead.
You know, I was going to say, it occurs to me that, yeah, the taxpayers might say, well, why, you know, we have to pay for grade school and high school, and now you're asking us to pay more for college. But on the other hand, if you're a parent or a grandparent and you have somebody in your family who wants to get a college education, money that would make it easier for them in terms of tuition and fees going down so they don't incur these humongous loan obligations for when they graduate, I think you would be inclined to support that. People who have family members who want to go to college, if the burden can be eased because the state is picking up more of the costs rather than putting it all on the students, I think that's something that you would be able to sell.
At WBEZ, we did a survey of people with student debt. We got hundreds of responses. It was surprising to see the number of people who had attended public schools here in Illinois and the amounts of debt they had from attending in-state tuitions. I think there is something to be said for trying to get that buy-in from taxpayers who are thinking about sending their own kids to college. Like, is this something they want their own children dealing with? Is like tens of thousands of dollars of student debt following them, you know, in some cases into their 50s and 60s? I think that's a really great point.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, along with Charlie Wheeler, Lisa Curry and Philip of WBEZ and WNIJ's Peter Medlin. Well, Peter, one way that students can help themselves go to college if they don't have the resources to pay for it outright is to get some financial aid. But we are hearing, and we've been hearing now for months, of problems with the what's known as the FAFSA. So fill us in on what this is and what has been the impact of some problems at the federal level with this financial aid.
Yeah, so they had been planning this huge change to the FAFSA form this year. It's a really substantial overhaul of basically just the entire way that they calculate financial aid from the Department of Education. And so they launched the new formula, they launched the new website, and then there was processing errors, technical glitches, the website was broken, there's calculation mistakes, particularly for families who don't have social security numbers, had particular troubles. And a lot of times, you know, they were submitting their forms, you know, in early January, and then those forms were sitting in limbo for months and months before they got corrected, which again, just gives you less and less time to make the decision that you want about your future. And so to zoom out nationally, across the board, FAFSA completion went down over 11% this year compared to last year. And if you look at, you know, particular school districts, you know, maybe again, that have a higher percentage of low income students or students of color or families who might not have social security numbers, you see those numbers go up, right? Like right in where Northern Illinois University is in DeKalb. And, you know, I took a look in very late April. So, you know, traditionally in the year, in the calendar, college decision day is May 1st, where a lot of students, you know, make their announcement of where they're going to be attending school. And basically by that time last year in 2023, 52%, so like just over half of those DeKalb high school seniors had completed their FAFSA. By this time this year, it was about half of that. I was down to 27%. So again, I think that you saw a consistent drop nationally in students completing the FAFSA and trying to get to see how much financial aid they might be eligible for. But then in those particular schools, you saw even bigger declines. And I even talked to some folks over at Northern Illinois University yesterday, where they were pointing to FAFSA as maybe a reason why they saw a drop in new freshman students. And, you know, it's hard to say exactly how big of a difference that made, but I mean, they told me that they saw an overall, again, like almost 10% decrease in FAFSA completions. And specifically with that freshman class alone, you know, 11% decrease over last year in FAFSA completion.
Lisa, this seems to be a problem. I was at the Springfield campus for the U of I, and in many other campuses, they've reported this. I know you've been looking at this for a long time. Has this problem been resolved? What's to be sure that we're not going to see a similar concerns going into next year's?
I don't think we are sure that it's not going to continue to be an issue, unfortunately. You know, even in recent weeks, there are students who still have not received their financial aid packages. And I'm hearing about especially vulnerable students, like students who face housing insecurity. They don't have this financial information or resources to continue, maybe continue being in school. Like this issue is still having an impact. And right now, the Department of Education is planning to open up this year's FAFSA in October just for beta testing. And it normally opens up in October, you know, to allow time. Peter referred to, like, students need time to get these packages back to sort of understand how much money they're going to be getting to help pay for their education, how much they're going to have to pay for out of pocket at each individual school. And that takes time. But right now the plan is to open it up for beta testing in October and November to like a select, you know, few testers, and then open it up hopefully more fully in December. And that kind of still leaves that time crunch that we saw last year. And it's also, you know, we're not sure that some of these bugs that came up last year are going to be resolved this year. So I think there's just like a lot, there's still so much uncertainty. And I think that really hurts low-income students, especially who most rely on this money to get to school. You know, like I spent last year shadowing a high school counselor, and he just talked so much about how there is already a lot of distrust in the educational system, largely because of the cost that it entails. And this whole situation with the FAFSA is really furthering that distrust. And in some cases, it's making students opt out of going to college.
Charlie, when we were, and you went to school before I did, but even when I went to school, there was this belief that you could work your way through school, you know, get a job, you know, help pay some of the bills, pay your tuition and housing, and you can do it on your own. That's become much harder. As you'd mentioned earlier in the show, the costs have really gone up. But also later, you were a professor. You were also recruiting students to come into your program. And I'm guessing financial aid has become a really big key for many of them to attend.
Yeah, and in my case, I was the director of the public affairs reporting program for 26 years before I retired. And in the beginning, I could go out and I could recruit students and say, you'll actually make money. You have to pay tuition and fees in the fall, but in the spring semester, which is the second half of the program, you'll have an internship and you'll get paid, and your tuition and fees are waived. And so the tuition and fees in the fall are less than what you'll make in your internship. And that was true for maybe the first 5 or 6 years. And then after that, the tuition and fees increased, internship pay did not. And as a result, it became, I couldn't really argue that, well, you're going to make money, but I could argue that the advantages you get professionally from having this experience at the internship, they're going to cost you, but not as much as it would cost you in the real world if you had to go out and try and get those on your own. But yeah, we noticed it quite a bit. Now, I think the university system, University of Illinois systems, Champaign, Chicago, and here in Springfield, has put tuition freezes in place for the last several years for incoming students, in the sense that if your tuition is X and you enter UIS, for example, your tuition for your sophomore year, your junior year, your senior year will still be X. It won't go up. We might jack tuition up 3 times for the kids who enter as freshmen when you're a senior, but you'll still be paying the same amount.
Right. Well, before we get too far along here and wrap up, I did want to mention something else that's coming that a lot of people on higher ed campuses are looking at, especially in the admissions offices. But maybe people are not aware of this outside of higher education, and that is what's being called an enrollment cliff. Peter, this idea is that we're going to see just a smaller number of students available to go to college here within just a couple of years.
Yeah, just the declining birth rates and the number of high school graduates plummeting over, coming soon. And I guess, unfortunately or fortunately, here in Illinois, like this is kind of nothing new for Illinois colleges and universities to deal with, because in Illinois, like the pool of public school students has shrunk pretty precipitously over the last decade. I think the numbers show that Illinois K through 12 public schools serve over 200,000 fewer students now than they did 10 years ago. So when you talk to administrators at universities and, people in enrollment will say, yeah, this is something that we've been dealing with for quite some time. Is it going to continue? Yeah, it sure seems like it is. So they're going to have to keep dealing with it. So again, they're looking at things like attracting transfer students, folks who are looking to get a credential for their work, all these things that people would refer to as like non-traditional students, but it's really something that's been on their mind for quite some time now.
Lisa, also just about a minute left here, but we have this problem possibly coming for college campuses. We also have a lot of students not able to afford to go to school. And then there's also been a bit of a mind shift, it appears, in the last several years when people are viewing college. Is it necessary to go to college? I mean, when I was younger, that was thought of as what you had to do. You plowed through it whether you wanted to go or not. Now that a lot of people are thinking of this differently, you talk to a lot of these younger folks. Is that real? Is that mentality out there?
I think it speaks a lot to the cost conversation. I think students are seeing how much debt you potentially have to take on to get a degree and are wondering whether it's worth the headache of dealing with that afterwards, whether it's a better option to enter the workforce right away and not have that debt weighing over you. I think there are a lot of students out there who still see want to go to college. It's just that, you have to take this extra consideration of whether the cost is worth it. And I think there are a lot of people who would make the argument that it very much is still worth it. It's just, as a state, we need to invest more, either through this new funding formula or other means, so that the cost conversation isn't making students opt out, and that, they're still continuing to reap the benefits of a college education without being bogged down by huge monthly student loan payments once they're done. And I think to something Peter said, I think there's a lot of conversation about how we draw working adults, into the higher ed sphere, people who didn't get a college education right after leaving high school. There are a lot of adults in that boat in the state, and how do we kind of get them into this onto campus so that they are also reaping the benefits, but also maybe this would help with our enrollment problems a little bit. So I think it's a very complicated conversation that I think the debt piece of it and the cost piece of it, they just play a big part.
And Peter, just a few seconds, but if you want to weigh in on that as well.
Yeah, and I think that that cost is making people have to feel like they're being a lot more practical about the decisions that they make if they want to go to college. I mean, we're seeing an increase in career and technical programs over the past couple of years. In Illinois, students can now earn what's called a college and career pathway endorsement, which is like a literal stamp on their high school diploma that says that they're, prepared. They've taken the necessary steps to prepare them for a career. So, even if they're going into something like computer science or even like teaching, that they've had internships, they've had experience in the field, that they feel, more prepared and more ready to go to college, than just deciding once they get there what to do. So I think it's also that cost part of it, and that, that debt is making people really weigh their decisions in maybe a slightly different way to be really practical about knowing for sure what they want to do and how much money they want to spend.
All right. Well, let's go to our notes from the field. Charlie, we'll go to you.
All righty. Well, this is not so much a note from the field as it is an update on a point from last week when we were talking about the state's clean energy goals. I suggested at the time that we were a long, long ways from Governor Pritzker's aim to have 1 million electric vehicles on the road by 2030, because the EPA had paid out only something like 8,000 rebates to folks buying EVs. A thoughtful listener contacted me to let me know the rebate numbers weren't an accurate gauge. For example, he said he owned an EV, but he never got a rebate. So, turns out that the Secretary of State actually keeps track of EVs licensed each year. And kind of in a happy coincidence, Crain Chicago Business did a story a couple of days ago saying that as of August 15th, there were 111,107 EVs licensed in Illinois, which was up 40% from the roughly 80,000 licensed in August of 2023. Now, if you look at it and say if we continue to increase at 40%, we still wouldn't reach Pritzker's goal. We'd be at roughly 840,000 by August of 2030. On the other hand, if EVs get cheaper and they get better and charging stations proliferate, the governor's goal is not out of the question.
And that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, also Lisa Kurian-Phillip, higher education reporter with WBEZ in partnership with Open Campus Media, and WNIJ's education reporter Peter Medlin. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.